Welcome to the Investment Answers Podcast. I'm Travis Turlaw.
And I'm Kelly Turlaw, and we're glad you're here.
We're a real couple that owns an actual financial planning firm.
Travis is a certified financial planner, an independent investment advisor representative, and the company's founder and CEO.
And Kelly is the chief operations officer, not only at Investment Answers, but also for our family.
A couple that works together stays together. Well, that might not always be true, but it works for us.
But that's why we make such a good team. I have the language and know-how to navigate this industry, and you're the total paranoid cynic.
All right, there's a lot going on there. Enough about us. What are we talking about this week?
Well, I want to talk about your dirty little secret.
What dirty little secret?
Well, it's not that little anymore. In fact, it keeps getting bigger and bigger every single day, especially on Sundays.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about that enormous stack of newspapers in our living room. Exactly what is the point of having that many newspapers?
I have them because I'm going to read them.
The key words here are going to read them.
I read them. It's just hard to get through them because when I fall behind, I get two new newspapers every single day of the week. So there's a lot of reading to do. But I pull a bunch of articles curated just for you, and I put them right on the very top for your reading pleasure.
I know. I grab them when I take the kids to gymnastics each week. In fact, I have one right here from the Wall Street Journal back from November of 2017. Remember this one? College savings imbalance. Parents put aside more for their sons than daughters.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. That one really pissed me off. Do you think that's true nowadays?
Well, it says here that the study from T. Rowe Price looked at 238 homes with only boys and 155 homes with only daughters. And it says the results were that 50% of the boy-only homes saved for college, where only 39% of the girl-only homes saved for college.
I would have thought, you know, how many kids on average were in each home, trying to figure out what we're talking about here. Is it small families or big families? But the article said the number of children actually didn't impact the results of the study.
What's more is that this study said that the boy-only families saved for college monthly 83% of the time, where the families that only had daughters saved for college monthly only 70% of the time.
Yeah, these results were fairly consistent with a T. Rowe Price study from 3 years earlier that basically said the same thing. 53% of families with sons only saved for college, where families with daughters only saved for college 42% of the time.
Well, even more recently, the article talked about a LendEDU study. LendEDU is a student loan marketplace, and they looked at 1,400 graduates overall. Those results showed that 10% of those families with only sons paid for the majority of their college, where 6% of the families paid for the majority of the college when they only had daughters.
That's not a crazy huge difference. That study said that 43% of the families that only have sons paid nothing for their college education, where it was 50% paid nothing for college if they only had daughters.
So why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, we could postulate for hours. You could spend an entire year doing a thesis on this because there's so many variables here. Yeah, so maybe it's a personality thing where the parents feel like they support the kid that's most likely to need it.
Well, the article has a lot more to say about it. It also talks about the presumption that girls will receive more merit-based scholarships than their male counterparts. But those stats seem to be really, really close, actually favoring the male slightly. Even though there are decades of research that show females consistently outperform males scholastically.
Well, and they're far more likely to go on to advanced degrees.
Right.
There was some pretty considerable feedback in this Wall Street Journal article. They ended up publishing it in like early December 2017. Some of them were pretty outrageous. This one guy, Bill Ward, actually said, and I'm quoting here, "Daughters don't take courses that pay bills."
Wow.
I know, right? I mean, mostly the comments were that fathers weren't worried about their daughters because, again, their nature was very independent and that their daughters had a lot of drive. But there was this one guy who said that his sisters and his wives all have advanced college degrees. There's 8 degrees between the three of them. And they had spent considerably more on their education than he had. And he said that with, like, quote, lowly bachelor's degree in physics, he earns more each year than the three of them combined. He also mentions that he thinks it's because he chose to go to a STEM degree, and STEM jobs typically pay more.
And by STEM, you mean science, technology, engineering, and math.
Right, exactly.
Right. So a lot of the comments and even the article talks about how the cost of raising a daughter is much higher than raising a son.
Well, I can see that. You know, they're the accessories, the shoes, all of the activities.
And then there's the wedding. And at the end of the article, several of the experts were saying that parents were factoring in the cost of their daughter's college education plus the likelihood of a wedding 10 years down the road.
Yeah. I mean, several of the comments also talked about that.
But this has real-world implications for women over time. I mean, remember, financial wellness is accumulative. So true wealth is developed over time.
Yeah.
In fact, in the same Wall Street Journal article, recent research by the nonprofit American Association of University Women shows that women are far more likely to take on debt for college, and they pay that debt back more slowly.
Huh.
So that's likely due to the gender pay gap, which is pretty considerable. Also, a 2015 study by the AAUW states that women's median weekly income is only 80% of men's.
Well, there's so much that goes in that discussion of gender pay gap. I mean, maybe they're not working as much because they're starting a family around that time when they're graduating.
Well, the gap also exists for raising funds. So the article mentions that in venture capital funding, for every dollar a man raises, a woman raises only 48 cents.
Wow. That's a huge disparity. Even compared to the gender wage gap, that's huge.
I don't really have any statistics about fundraising for nonprofits, but I wonder about a potential disparity there.
We can think of several women that are beasts when it comes to fundraising.
Well, it's not really a study that's measuring talent for fundraising. It's simply stating that women have a huge disparity for venture capital funding, or for fundraising. If you're starting off a new business and mired in college debt, and you raise half of what your male counterpart raises, who's also your competitor, then she's really going to have to fight an uphill battle because of that college debt.
When I read this article, it really made me reflect on something that I realized personally about us years ago with our niece and nephew.
Right.
We were talking about the gifts that we would give them. And when they were little, we'd buy them these really cute toys, things we thought they would like that were really cool. And we'd spend the same amount of money on the toys for each of them. But as they get older, they don't really want toys. You know, what teenagers want is they want cash.
Right.
So what I found a while back was that we were spending the same amount of money budgeted for each our niece and our nephew, but we were just giving him straight up cash.
Right.
Where we were buying her something pretty or something we knew she would like, and then giving her cash to like fill in the budget.
Right.
And it's just not fair.
Well, and what we found was that even though the cost of the gift was the same, the value of the gift wasn't the same because
it's easier to
find a cute gift for our niece because there's more options available for her. And we were just giving our nephew cash, but that was actually giving him more flexibility and creativity for his own gifts.
Yeah, financial wellness,
right.
too.
So it's actually teaching him more of how he can use his own money, whereas we were giving her a gift and then a little bit of money, but she wasn't having the opportunity to create her own destiny with what.
Like, if they both wanted to save up for a computer, he gets the computer much faster because he's got cash sitting there. And then if she gets something that she does really like, she's got to wait a couple more birthdays or do a couple more babysitting jobs or something to be able to get the same computer as him.
Right.
The thing is, I feel like I've got to fill in this gap for her. Like, we gave her basically like this gender-based financial gap on accident.
Right.
We're older and wiser now. We've got our own kids. And I think we've learned from that real experience what we did to them innocently, that we just can't do it with our own children.
Well, and look at where, so they're both in college now. So when you think about his trajectory and her trajectory, he is part of the STEM program. He is going for computer science, and she's going to college for education. She wants to be a high school teacher, and that's a very respectable
job. Very noble, very noble.
However, the likelihood is he is going to make more money based on his
probably
career than what she's going to make.
And he's also going to have to like learn how to fundraise and do that venture capital fundraising potentially if it goes into this environment of like starting a new company too. Nobody's going to give her money for classroom supplies for her students, but they'll give him money for his academic contribution to building this company.
I know. So when you think about it, so the intelligence there, obviously they're very similar intelligence wise. In fact, she was the valedictorian of her high school.
She's snazzy.
And so she's brilliant, but her career path is not going to have the same compensation as his. And what we experienced over time was we were giving him more tools for financial education than we were giving to her. And it was unintentionally, but it happened anyway.
I mean, she looked gorgeous.
Well, of course she did. Of course she always looks gorgeous.
Because we gave her so many snazzy things to go with her already existing snazzy things.
But when we look at our own children, we have to think about how are we going to equalize that financial education for both our son and daughter? And what types of steps are we going to take to help
avoid a financial gap for them
to help to do that. So what we started doing several years ago was we had a grandparent who, she was going to buy some nice stuff for the kids,
a couple
and
key
everything
things
for the grandkids.
Yeah,
but she started buying stock for the kids. And
every birthday
she had a card.
And every Christmas.
So they got a little gift and they got a card that said, by the way, I just want to let you know I bought you stock for your birthday or I bought you stock for Christmas. And she gave the same amount of money for each grandchild. She has three grandkids, two granddaughters, one grandson.
Yep.
And she gave them the same amount of money for their birthday and for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then I would go and I would buy a stock that is relevant to their life. So it would be something that they, maybe a toy that they played with. It would be an experience that they had.
Yeah.
Something that they could relate to.
Well, first it was kind of a stock that she thought they would like. And then it turned into you all discussing stocks that were looking good in the market at the time. Mm-hmm. But now it's different because now we're having the discussion. We're opening up those statements and showing the kids, look how much is in your brokerage account and look at how much you own of this company and how much you own of that company. So when they go and see a movie or they buy a toy or they buy something from a particular place or are involved in an activity from a particular place, they actually go into that store with a sense of ownership because when they own the stock, they actually own a piece of that company.
Right. And now we're getting feedback from the kids, where they'll get the letter or the card that says, "Hey, I just gave such and such amount of money to this account," and then we can talk to the kids and say, "Well, you remember that video, that game that you bought? Well, that company, you can buy stock in that company. You can own a piece of that company. You remember that doll that you got?
Yeah.
You can own a piece of that company. So where would you like to place those funds, and how would you like to buy that stock?" So when they go into that store, they know they're actually helping their own stock price.
It's actually even cooler too, because some of those companies have merged. And so where they used to be competitors, now they're the same company, you know, or like technology devices that we use or whatever, because you're trying to have that wide variety. You don't want to have all of your stocks in one place. So it's been really cool talking to the kids about it. But I also think that it leaves, just from a grandparent's perspective, they don't really want to go in the stores and buy a bunch of junk for the kids because they already feel like they've got too much junk. So they really don't actually have to go shopping and go through the drama of the day after Thanksgiving, getting out in the stores and getting the best deals and forgetting things in the closet that they bought back in June and they intended to give in Christmas. You know, it kind of alleviates all of that when they are just buying the stock. It makes it easier for the grandparents, what I'm saying.
Honestly, for me, it takes the guesswork and the stress and anxiety out of gift giving, because a share of stock in a company is always the right size.
Yeah.
It's always the right color. It fits properly.
Yeah.
And you'll never outgrow it.
Well,
and it's something that
the longer you keep it, the likelier, the better it is for you.
The longer you keep it, if it's a good stock, it's the more it's going to grow.
Yeah.
And the more value it's going to have. So it's not something, and I won't step on it at 2 o'clock in the morning and rake my toe across it.
So
because
true.
It's,
so true.
It's something that's lying on the floor.
It will be interesting to see if any of their stocks like actually lose value over time, to see their reaction to having had this and now they have less. So it'll be interesting to see over time their reaction and their understanding, because, you know, it's very intangible to them right now. It's just something that's coming in on a piece of paper. The conversation will develop over time with them about, when do you use this money? When do you leave it in there? What happens if you're feeling nervous about the investment? Or I just like the fact that they can have the conversation with their grandparent. It's a discussion they're having with us. It's a discussion they're having with her. It's a full family discussion.
And we're going to get to a point where they have savings accounts. Yeah. They've got their money. They've got their little piggy banks that are all set up. Yeah.
Kind of lightens the pressure for us later.
But eventually what we're getting to a point is they're going to be investing their own money. So these are gifts.
Yeah.
So these gifts are starting the financial education for their own growth.
Sure.
But eventually they're going to get to a point where they've got money in their savings account and they're going to say, well, I want to invest in the account that I have set up for me.
Sure.
And they're going to want to buy their own stock. So then they're going to learn the emotional attachment to putting their own money into an account where they're buying stock and other things that might lose value or grow. And they'll be able to start to relate that emotional investing early on, which will give them, I mean, the financial education for this is huge.
Well, so you know that bank that we have for them where it's divided into three. And so one is store, one is savings, and one is like charity.
Mm-hmm.
So this actually adds like a fourth bank to it.
Right. So
where it's your future.
Save.
Yeah.
Give, invest.
Invest in yourself,
so now we've
in
got
your future.
Four categories.
Yeah.
And this is just the next level of their financial education.
It's pretty cool.
And unfortunately, I mean, when I was in high school, I never learned about this stuff.
No.
I didn't have a stock class. I didn't have an investing or economics class where it just shared with me, or it gave me the education of how I'm going to live as an adult. And what we're ultimately trying to do as parents is raise good adults, not good kids, but adults that
productive.
Are confident, productive adults.
Successful and financially.
Financial awareness is huge for an adult. Because so many adults nowadays don't have it.
Yeah.
And if you don't get it early on, the likelihood of you having it when you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond.
Well, that's what we were saying earlier from the article, because it's talking about starting a new business. You're so excited about this new venture, but then you're mired in this debt.
Right.
So this is important because of the success that you have. It's a fund that's set aside. So when you're reaching for those dreams later on, you've got something that you can pull from where you leverage time, right? So that's really the issue here, is that these are kids and the hope is that they have time that they can leverage. And I was given stock when I was 2 years old and I've had it my entire life and I've never done anything with it. And it's just done this amazing thing for me. And I learned so much from that experience. And it's really cool to see that the grandparent is moving forward. I just keep telling the other grandparents when they're complaining that the kids don't look that happy about getting socks and shoes and shirts and pants and everything. It's like they don't actually care about the clothes that much. They appreciate them, but they're getting older. The toys aren't really going to be the thing for them so much.
Right.
But if you just want to kind of alleviate, your kids are not going to be like, oh, thanks for the stock, and then like go on for 6 hours about it. You know, everybody's expectations about their reactions a little bit lower when it's a piece of paper. Thanks for my stock. Thanks for investing in my future. But 10 years down the line, even if the grandparents are...
Right. The older they get, the more they're going to appreciate. To be honest with you, the decisions that, especially the financial decisions that they make in their 20s, they're going to pay for or benefit from
that's
in
true.
Their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Well, and the decisions you make in your 30s, you either benefit from or you pay for them.
Exactly.
It's one or
so
the other.
You set the foundation.
Yeah.
You might as well do it early. And it doesn't have
to
be a lot.
While you have time.
I mean, we're not talking about massive amounts of money.
No, we're talking small increments
amounts of money that builds up over
time. That a single person that's retired can afford to invest.
And this can actually help the parents with their own financial education. So if you have a parent or a grandparent of your child who is willing to do this for your child, their grandchild, learn from this experience, and this can actually help you with your own financial education. And to be honest with you, I mean, as you're a young adult with a young family, the earlier you start, the better off you're going to be well into your retirement years.
Absolutely. So absolutely. Leverage time.
Leverage time.
And small amounts accumulate. I think that's the lesson that we're saying here. And this is different than like giving an allowance. This is very different, which we'll talk about at a different time.
Right. But this type of conversation that you're going to have with your kids, I mean, have it with them. You don't have to have it with them when they're two. But when you feel like they're old enough to be able to understand the concepts.
Yeah, put the money in when they're two, though.
Right.
Put it in when they're two and you talk about it later.
We've been doing this for so many years. And now look at how big it is.
Yeah.
Look at what's happened over time. You never saw it. And now let's talk about what you want to do.
Absolutely.
How would you like to invest? What companies do you like? Where did you get this toy? Do you want to invest in that?
So we're not saying a specific recommendation about a stock that you do here. No. It's about something that is reflective of your child's interest or your family's interest or your community. Something that the important thing is to invest in things that you understand and that you know.
Well, there's an old investing like motto, right? And when someone asks, what should I invest in? What company should I invest in? All the big gurus say, well, if you're just starting out, invest in what you consume. What do you buy?
Absolutely. I agree.
If you buy something, there's likely that a lot of other people are buying it and you understand it. Whether it's a food company or a toy
company
or a grocery store or a technology company, you know what products you buy and who makes those products.
And you know if they're good or bad.
Right. And you know the quality of those. So if the quality is good, you know the stock's going to be good. The company's going to be good. So invest in those types of companies. Yep. And that's a good way for you to get started.
Well, to tie it kind of back to your little snarky comment there at the beginning about my newspapers, as the kids get older.
Scaring the cat, I'm just saying.
But what I would say is as they get older, it's going to be like you want to find out if people, so if you love a product or a company and you consume that, more advanced investing is, does that company manage their money well? And you're going to find that by reading articles. And so that is part of the reason why I have a really hard time throwing them away. Even though they pile up, I learn so much, you know, for years now from reading through those articles. So my advice, read as much as you can about companies that you consume and invest early on.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Good advice.
I'm not the expert here, so, but I would say it's worked for me over time.
Absolutely. And it works for everybody. If you're consuming information, getting that knowledge, you say it all the time, an informed consumer is a powerful consumer. Get that knowledge and apply the knowledge.
Yep.
You know, knowledge, just being knowledge is one thing, but knowledge with application is wisdom.
Absolutely.
So have the wisdom. Use that knowledge to your advantage.
Use the time to your advantage.
Absolutely.
Use leverage time.
Absolutely.
All right.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
And now it's time for It's All About the Numbers. And this week's numbers are 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, and 37. No, those aren't this week's lottery numbers. Those are the new individual income tax rates for 2018, thanks to the 2017 Tax Act. The Tax Foundation estimates that the new law will increase the after-tax incomes of all taxpayer groups in 2018 by somewhere between 0.8% and 2.2%. The standard deduction for a married couple filing jointly has nearly doubled, increasing from $13,000 in 2017 to $24,000 in 2018. Head of households went from $9,550 in 2017 to $18,000 in 2018, and you single filers out there can deduct $12,000 in 2018 as opposed to $6,500 in 2017. The corporate tax rate was significantly decreased as well, going from a graduated level of anywhere from 15 to 35% to a flat rate at 21% under the new tax law. The intent of this tax decrease is to encourage corporations not only to invest back into their companies, but their employees and communities as well. Even though the new tax brackets are slightly lower from the previous categories, many workers will now move into a lower tax bracket under the new law. For example, let's say you are a married couple making $76,000 in 2018. You'll pay 12% in federal income tax as opposed to 25% in 2017. But one thing to look out for is make sure you're checking the amount of taxes taken out of your paycheck every week. If you fall into a lower tax bracket in 2018 as opposed to 2017, you may be paying Uncle Sam unnecessary taxes, and you'll have to wait all the way until next year to receive your refund.
So, Travis, what if people want to learn more?
Well, Kelly, I'm glad you asked. For more information on this or any other topics we've discussed, or to check out our disclaimer, go to www.investmentanswers.net or email us directly at info@investmentanswers.net. Investment Answers. Leave uncertainty behind. Until next time, I'm Travis Turlaw.
And I'm Kelly Turlaw.
And thanks for listening.